The Capitol remembers America's longest-serving member of Congress.
West Virginia's Robert Byrd has died after 51 years in office.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, June 28th. Senator Robert Byrd passed away last night. His death may have effects far beyond the borders of West Virginia.
At the G20 in Toronto, world leaders commit to deficit cutting, and there's a new bagel in New York. It's got a deficit of its own. But first,
the Senate is preparing for a close vote on financial regulatory reform. And Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson is here to tell us how Senator Byrd's passing might impact that vote. Hi, Jeremy.
Morning, Bill.
Financial reform seemed pretty final. Is it in jeopardy now?
It could be. As you said, it's going to be a close vote. Senator Byrd was expected to vote for the bill. Now, Republican Senator Scott Brown, who was elected earlier this year to fill Ted Kennedy's seat in Massachusetts, has announced that he may not vote for the bill because he doesn't like that it's being paid for by a $19 billion tax on large financial institutions. Now, if Brown is a no, the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, may have to convince one of the Democrats, there were two of them who voted against it, to support the bill this time around. Also, at some point, it's not clear when, the Democratic governor of West Virginia will be able to appoint a successor to Senator Byrd until a special election can be held to replace him. But the president wanted to sign this financial reform bill by the 4th of July, so there's not a whole lot of time for that succession process to happen.
Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joining us. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks, Bill.
He was a fiery orator and aficionado of American history and politics. Senator Robert Byrd was also known for bringing home the bacon to the Mountain State, West Virginia. That's what more than 50 years in Congress will do for a state. Russell Sobel is professor of economics at West Virginia University. He's with us live from Morgantown. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Steve.
Your first reaction.
Yep, the decades-long federal stimulus plan for West Virginia is finally over.
There you go. Yeah, and I mentioned, more than 50 years in Congress. I mean, he's brought home a lot.
Yeah, I tell you what, he's had a really big impact on the state. West Virginia is one of only two states with more than 50% of the economy being government spending. Everywhere you drive around, people jokingly call him bird droppings. They're all over the state, things with his name on them.
All the things in the state they call bird droppings?
Well, because everywhere you drive, virtually everywhere you drive, you see buildings and roads with his names on them. And, we've got a lot of projects around here that have been funded through federal dollars for a very long time.
Now, I understand that there's even a Coast Guard center that he was so powerful he brought the Coast Guard to West Virginia, even though the state's not even on the water.
Yes, we've got a lot of those. A lot of people in West Virginia who've been getting federal funding for a long time, and they sure know how to compete for it and write grants to get it and know how to spend it. Just this last year, we put up 1/10 of a mile markers all over our interstates. That's all this federal port coming in, and really it's a legitimate question about whether, getting rid of that government spending is going to be a net positive or negative when we look out into the future for the economy.
1/10 of a mile instead of mile markers. You've got markers on every 10th.
Like 79 South, 131.7, We spend a lot of money trying to create jobs here, but what's happened is that we've fallen down to the bottom of the economic pack despite all this federal money. It's not been very effective.
So very quickly, sir, in about 10 seconds or so, will the state have to rethink projects going forward?
Yeah, firms here are going to have to learn how to compete in the private sector for private dollars instead of competing for grants. But more importantly, we need to get our state business climate improved so that we can have the private sector growth that will help to replace the federal funding.
Economics Professor Russell Sobel at West Virginia University in Morgantown. Professor, thanks.
Thank you.
Today, the Supreme Court struck down part of the Sarbanes-Oxley law. That's the anti-fraud mandate passed after all the corporate accounting scandals from a decade ago, Enron, WorldCom. In a 5-4 vote, justices said the law, enacted in 2002, violates the Constitution's separation of powers mandate. They ruled the president must be able to remove members of a board created to tighten oversight of internal corporate controls and outside auditors. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is with us now to talk about financial reform circa 2010. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
All right. So despite what happened today with Sarbanes-Oxley and the Supreme Court striking down part of it, it was supposed to clean up financial reporting at public companies. Did it work?
Well, it worked to a very small extent. And as I'm sure some of us know, after today, it may not exist because the Supreme Court may be throwing it out very soon. But it didn't really solve the problem. There were all of these penalties where if a company had to restate its earnings, there was supposed to be dire consequences, and nothing really happened. The best part of Sarbanes-Oxley was if you were an accountant or a consultant, you made a lot of money.
So, you don't think Sarbanes-Oxley did much. Do you think these proposed financial regulations will stand the test of time?
No, I don't think they will, except for possibly the consumer agency. I think it'll be seen as tinkering around the edges. And when the next crisis appears, which I predict will be within the next 10 years, we'll discover that, as usual, we adopted laws that didn't really solve the last problem and are not solving the new one.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, June 28th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. The summit of the world's 20 economic powers has wrapped up in Toronto. Over the weekend, the G20 was dominated by a debate over how quickly to shift from economic stimulus to deficit reduction. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with a recap. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So what agreement did the meetings produce?
Well, the G20 countries agree to cut their budget deficits in half by 2013, and that includes the United States. But there's a compromise here, plenty of wiggle room, because the G20 have agreed to pay attention to growth. So a country that feels it will be jeopardizing its recovery by meeting that target could be let off the hook.
And here in the States, Stephen, Congress has made progress, or did on Friday anyway, on financial reform legislation. Was there any movement on the G20 on bank regulations?
Yes, they've agreed to raise significantly the amount and quality of capital that banks need to hold. But there are no numbers yet, and there's a compromise here too. As Dr. Dominic Swords of the Henley Business School points out, G20 countries won't be forced to adopt new regulations in a short time frame.
There's signalling of a lot of flexibility. Different countries with different circumstances, different needs, may be given up to 5 or 6 years fully to implement the new arrangements.
More details of those new arrangements are likely to emerge at the G20 summit in Korea in November.
All right, Stephen, what's the final grade then for this G20? What are people saying?
5 out of 10, straight down the middle. I mean, supporters of this kind of summitry always say it's good for the leaders to talk, to get together. Jaw, as Churchill said, is better than war. While critics will say it doesn't really make a lot of sense to spend $1 billion talking about the need for austerity.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London this morning. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Farm workers say they're tired of hearing that illegal immigrants are stealing jobs from Americans. Now one group is turning the tables. The Take Our Jobs campaign is offering to put Americans to work in the agriculture industry. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Need a job? The United Farm Workers is ready to help.
We will assist them in trying to find a job within their area.
That's Union President Arturo Rodriguez. He says most agriculture jobs are outside, where temperatures are often above 90 degrees.
Pay-wise, in most cases, farm workers make minimum wage.
He hopes to demonstrate that these are undesirable jobs and that the country needs immigrant labor.
Without them, we would have a failed agricultural economy.
In the first day of operations, Rodriguez says lots of American citizens did sign up to take their farm jobs.
We've gotten 1,400 applicants.
Does that mean the publicity stunt backfired? Rodriguez says no.
If we can help the unemployment situation, great.
Ultimately, the United Farm Workers want Congress to enact a bill known as Ag Jobs. It would give undocumented immigrants currently in the labor force a path to legalization, provided they continue to work on farms. The legislation is currently stalled in the Senate. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, June 28th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Tomorrow, electric vehicle company Tesla Motors becomes the first U.S. carmaker to go public since Ford. Tesla is one of several clean tech companies trying to go public. The problem is many of them are getting cold feet. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Rob Schmitz reports.
Now you see them, now you don't. A bunch of clean tech startups recently filed paperwork to be publicly traded, only to cancel at the last minute. Solar panel company Solyndra was the latest, performing an about-face 2 weeks ago. Green Tech's Eric Wesoff says all these companies have one thing in common.
None of them are making money. None of them are profitable. And none of them will be profitable in the foreseeable future.
And this makes investors nervous. So the venture capital crowd is pushing many clean tech companies out of the IPO gate prematurely, says Wesoff.
Venture capitalists, when they make an investment in a startup, have very strong expectations of an exit from these companies. And that exit can come through either an IPO or through an acquisition or a merger with a larger company.
Wesoff says there's one more problem. Washington lacks a clear roadmap for a stable clean tech market. All the more reason venture capitalists will be keeping an eye on Tesla's ticker symbol starting tomorrow. I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The price for refined white sugar is higher than it's been for 22 years. That's because the cane sugar harvest was poor all over the world. Rising prices of refined sugar don't affect people in the developed world too much. We don't get sticker shock in the grocery store. But in the not-so-developed world, it can be a very big deal, as Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
If you're like me, you put sugar in your coffee each morning, one packet or two, without thinking much about the cost.
And that's kind of the idea.
Jack Scoville is a vice president at Price Futures Group in Chicago. He says the price of sugar nearly doubled last year, but most Americans didn't notice.
We have a very controlled environment. You shouldn't see it increase so much in the grocery store.
He says that's because the U.S. subsidizes sugar. Our buyers pay more than the market price when sugar prices are low, so we can pay less when they're high. Other nations have to follow the market. In many places, alternatives like corn syrup and saccharin aren't part of the food system. Scoville says sugar is an especially big deal in parts of the Middle East, India, and Asia.
They're much bigger consumers of sugar, and it's a much more important part of their diet.
Which is why, when sugar supplies run short, governments get nervous.
It can create almost a panic situation. People will then start rushing to make sure that they have sufficient supplies, and prices move higher.
Scoville says this year's sugar harvest looks a lot better than last year's. That's led countries to avoid buying at current prices. They'll try to hold out until that new cane is processed into fine white crystals, and the market comes down from its sugar high. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
And finally, the New York bagel isn't dying, but it's wounded. So says the New York Post about the consumer trend of ordering your bagel scooped out.
A Long Island bagel purveyor says 90% of his customers are now ordering the soft, doughy inside of their bagels removed as a way to cut back on carbs.
Disfigured. That's the word bagel purists are using.
Not only that, a nutritionist says scooping out a bagel saves maybe 75 calories. Less than that if it's just an excuse to fit in more cream cheese.
And that is the excuse.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.